science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of ThinkWorks, a place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, we're going to pick up on our mini-series on the difference in philosophies between Western tracts and the Eastern and Indian philosophies that we've been covering for the last few weeks on and off. This week, I want to look at the idea of reality. Now, if you remember way back a few episodes ago now when we looked at Western philosophy, we discussed Plato's allegory of the cave. And the idea of that was, imagine a group of men, they've been chained in a cave and all they see is the light flickering from some torches, and the captors are always out of view, but they've set it up in such a way that their shadows can be seen. So all the reality that these men know are the shadows on the cave. One of them escapes, gets out into the real world, sees what reality really is, but when he goes back into the cave to try and free his other captors and explain to them the world that waits outside, they simply refuse to believe him because their reality cannot be challenged. Now, that's it in a nutshell. You can go and dig out the earlier episode to hear it in full detail. But I want to look at the Eastern and Indian equivalents of the allegory of the cave, which was originally put forward by Plato, of course. If we consider, for example, the concept of Maya. So Maya is often described as a cosmic illusion that confuses the senses and binds individuals to the material world. It's a force that creates the appearance of diversity and multiplicity in the universe, and it causes people really to see the duality of things rather than the single oneness of Brahman, which is the absolute reality. So in the context of daily life, then, Maya manifests itself as a belief in the tangible and the concrete reality of the world and the ego, but it leads individuals to form attachments and desires and aversions which keep them engaged in the cycle of rebirth and away from spiritual truth. The implication, the philosophical implication of that, is that Maya is not considered real in the ultimate sense, although it profoundly influences day-to-day reality. And it's through that veil that we individuals, that we perceive the world incorrectly, much like the shadows on the cave wall in Plato's allegory. Now, if you want to understand the liberation or release from the cycle of birth and rebirth, which is samsara, this is about understanding or achieving moksha. Its achiever, one realizes their identity with Brahman. It transcends Maya's illusion and helps you to persevere with trying and journeying towards perceiving the ultimate reality. Now, the path to moksha is the jnana yoga, which is the path to knowledge, and Advaita Vedanta, knowledge or wisdom, the jnana, is crucial. This path involves self-inquiry and the dissolution of ignorance through the realization of one's true nature as Atman, which is non-different from Brahman. This leads to discrimination, or the viveka, which develops the ability to distinguish between the real, the Brahman, and the unreal, the Maya. That also means detachment, so cultivating dispassion and detachment from the material world and desires helps you understand the transient nature of material world and desires. That leads to discipline, which means that if you practice ethical living, meditation and reflection to focus the mind and direct it towards the truth, it takes you beyond your sensory experiences. Guru's guidance is then the next step, and that is guidance from a realized teacher or guru to help you in navigating spiritual questions and practices. And then scriptural study, skruti, and I'm going to struggle with the pronunciation of this word, upanishad, I hope I've got that right. And this is engaging with sacred texts that elaborate on the nature of consciousness and reality that helps in intellectual awakening and understanding. All that leads to the realization of Atman as Brahman. So the culmination of those practices leads to the realization that Atman, the self, and Brahman, the ultimate reality, are actually one and the same. And that dissolves the illusion of separateness imposed by Maya. This realization is akin to stepping out of Plato's cave and seeing the real world for the first time. So through understanding Maya and striving for moksha, individuals in Hindu philosophy therefore aim to transcend the limitations of physical and sensory perception to reach a state of true freedom and enlightenment, paralleling the philosophical explorations found in Plato's allegory, but with unique cultural nuances and methods. A profound union of self and the universe therefore marks the highest state of existence in the Vedanta. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the Four Noble Truths and enlightenment. And just to remind you what they are, so this is the foundation, obviously, of Buddhist teachings. It actually, when you look at it in the question of reality, it basically, like the prisoners in Plato's cave, it basically directly addresses the human experience of ignorance and suffering. So the Four Noble Truths are, just to remind you, are dukkha, which is suffering, which is life is inherently unsatisfactory, and this includes not only physical pain, but also the psychological sense of dissatisfaction and impermanence. You've then got the Samudaya, origin of suffering. The root cause of suffering, therefore, is the desire or craving, which stems from ignorance about the true nature of reality. The Nirodha, which is the cessation of suffering, removes desire and ignorance, because then one can achieve Nirvana, which is the state of liberation and freedom from suffering. And then that leads to the Magga, or the path to cessation, which is the Eightfold Noble Path, which offers practical solutions to overcome ignorance and achieve enlightenment. This path includes right understanding, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. And the journey to enlightenment, therefore, or the Bodhi, is a process of removing ignorance and seeing reality for what it truly is, unclouded by delusion. It parallels the ascent from the cave into the sunlight of truth in Plato's allegory. It also characterizes enlightenment as profound understanding and insight into the nature of reality, which often describes as seeing things as they truly are. Within Buddhism also, if you looked at the doctrine of anatta, or the no self, the notion of anatta is basically, it asserts that there's no permanent unchanging self or soul in living beings, and this is the direct challenge to the conventional understanding of identity. And it's marked by the three marks of existence in Buddhism, alongside impermanence and suffering, the anicca and the dukkha. The challenge in the illusion of the self, therefore, which we consider the self is merely a collection of changing physical and mental elements called the five aggregates, form, sensation, perception, mental formations, and consciousness, all that is a belief that questions the shadows of identity which we perceive, much like the shadows on the cave wall, and it highlights our misinterpretations of reality. And therefore, realizing anatta is crucial for attaining nirvana, as attachment to a false sense of self is a source of suffering. By understanding the illusionary nature of self, individuals can let go of ego-driven desires and attachments. Really important. Now, if you compare all that with Plato's allegory of the cave, everything serves a similar purpose. So both the journey by the prisoner in Plato's allegory and the journey down the Buddhist path to enlightenment both involve moving from ignorance to awareness and from illusion to truth. But there's a reality beyond the illusion, where Plato speaks of shadows and the eventual realization of the real, and that therefore forms the escape. Buddhism speaks of the illusion of self and reality, the samsara, that one must penetrate to reach enlightenment, the nirvana. Through these concepts, Buddhism offers a path of insight and liberation by understanding the true nature of experience and identity, encouraging a transformation from misperception to enlightenment, which is much like the story depicted in Plato's allegory. If we turn to the East and we have the concept of the Tao is often described as the way. It's the fundamental principle that is the source and the governing force behind everything in the universe. It is considered elusive and beyond complete verbal articulation and emphasizes a reality that exists beyond conventional comprehension. And unlike the definitive truth aimed for in Western thought, Tao in Taoism is about embracing mystery and accepting that some aspects of existence are beyond human understanding. So the philosophical implications of that is, if you have, basically the Tao is about transcending ordinary understanding. Yes, it's the path or the method of the universe that things naturally follow. And understanding Tao means perceiving the subtle relationships that flows in nature and existence, akin to realizing the deeper truths behind the shadows in Plato's cave. But there is a paradox in this. Taoist texts like the Tao Te Ching by Laozi often speak in paradoxes, highlighting the insufficiency of language and conventional logic to encapsulate the Tao. This idea aligns with the journey from the cave, leaving familiar shadows behind for an unfamiliar but more profound illumination. If you then look at the idea of Wu Wei, which is the effortless action, this translates to non-action or effortless action, as we've just said. It promotes the idea of acting in harmony with the flow of the universe, and it achieves outcomes with minimal effort and resistance. But this is not advocating being passive or being inactive, but it actually rather calls for actions that are in line with the natural order and executed without a forced effort or struggle. So if you live by Wu Wei, you have to align with the natural flow. And it means that you align oneself with the Tao, allowing life to unfold in a natural rhythm. This might mirror the transformed understanding of the free prisoner who acts upon their new enlightened view of the world, as in the allegory. But it's responsive and adaptive. So instead of attempting to control the situation, individuals embracing Wu Wei respond to their environment with subtlety and flexibility, finding therefore balance and harmony. Now there is a deeper truth beyond the tangible here. Just as the prisoner exits the cave in the allegory of the cave, realizes there's a higher plane of truth beyond the shadows, Taoism encourages moving beyond surface level comprehension to grasp the Tao, which orchestrates the universe in ways often unseen or unfelt by the senses. And it means you have to learn to live in harmony, but with understanding, but an understanding that could be limited by our human experience. The concept of Wu Wei suggests that living in a manner that echoes the philosopher's role in Plato's allegory, where true understanding leads to harmonious action rather than struggle against the natural societal currents. Taoism, with its profound yet simple philosophy, therefore encourages a lifestyle and mindset that seeks authenticity and unity with the universe, moving past superficial appearances and constraints, and that is a perspective that beautifully parallels and yet complements the philosophical exploration seen in Plato's allegory. So what we're really looking at here is, so if you want some specific similarities, then you've got illusion versus reality. Both the Eastern concept of Mayo and Plato's shadows highlight that what we perceive is not the ultimate truth. And enlightenment, therefore, is seen as liberation. The metaphor of the cave parallels the Eastern journey towards enlightenment, emphasizing a transformation of perspective and wisdom, but there are some key differences. So the role of the individual in Western or Plato-based philosophy, which often focuses on individual enlightenment leading to societal return and teaching, it's not the same as the Eastern philosophies, which often emphasize personal liberation as an end goal. The nature of reality, as seen in the Western approach, often posits a definitive truth to be understood, whereas the Eastern philosophies can be more fluid, focusing on harmony and balance rather than a singular truth. It's the idea that there is more truth around the next corner, but you may never ever get to the end of the journey to perceive the ultimate truth. And I guess that's it in a nutshell. The whole idea that in Western philosophy, I think reality is an idea that can be discovered, it can be understood, it just needs the right kind of questions, it needs the right kind of thought experiments, it needs the right kind of seeking of truth, and you will find the truth. In Eastern and Indian philosophies, it's not quite that simple. The truth is, we will never, as human beings, fully understand the truth, because it is beyond our ability to fully comprehend whilst we remain in our human form. But it also says that there is a oneness between our reality that we perceive as humans and the oneness of the universe. And when we step beyond our mortal coil and return to the universe, that's when we achieve our understanding, our nirvana, our enlightenment, and understand that the truth is what everything is, rather than us as an individual within that. That was a quick run through, I know, but it's a mind-blowing subject, and I think with this one, I just wanted to give you really the kind of feel of what each of these philosophies really stand for and the differences and the similarities are there. But reality is something that you can't do, I think, in a simple podcast. What I wanted to do was to tease out some ideas for you to go and do some more research on for yourself, and then come back and ask me questions, and we'll answer those questions in the forum, which is, of course, as regular listeners will know, which is darreninform.com/thinkworksforum. There's always a post for each of the individual podcast episodes, and you can comment in there, ask questions, and have a discussion. Tell me your own theories about what reality truly is, or some thought experiments that I haven't considered that I may want to consider for a future episode, for example. So come and join me there. In the meantime, the key thing that I really want to get across more than anything, especially in this world of sound bites and just noise, constant noise of people trying to shut down the truth or shut down on ideas that contradict their own ideas, we've got to stop that. And the only way to stop that is by asking questions. And that is what ThinkWorks is all about. I want to encourage everyone listening to start asking questions and not to be told to shut up. Without questions, we don't get anywhere. Without questions, we can't engage imagination. Without imagination, we can't approach problems in a new way. We, and the definition of insanity, folks, is trying to do the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result. Sometimes we have to go beyond that, and that's what ThinkWorks is really encouraging you all to do. Just ask questions. Right, thanks, folks. I'll see you all next week. I've no idea what I'm doing next week, but I'm sure it's going to be equally mind-blowing. Ta-ta for now.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @DarrenInform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.